PFT Media. You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
This episode of Cinema Crespediso is brought to you by Orange Blossom Brewing, home of OBP, OBP Squared, Toasted Coconut Porter, and Back in the Day IPA. This episode is also brought to you by the Art Gallery at Mills Park, located at 1650 North Mills Avenue, Orlando, Florida, 32803. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cinema Crespediso. We're doing a bonus episode. I am Chris Crespo, hanging out with Drew Sikog. Drew, how you doing?
What up, dude? How goes it?
Doing well, my old man. You know, it's the wet summer. It's humid. All my clothing is sticking to me.
Dude, at 5 o'clock this morning, it was 80 degrees outside, and it felt like I was walking into a sauna.
There you go. At 5 o'clock this morning, it was 80 degrees. Hope that helps you whenever and wherever you are listening to the show. We're doing a special bonus episode this week. Join us again from episode 281 is our new friend, Boris. How you doing, Boris?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing great. And you brought a friend, son of Lee Hazelwood. Mark Hazelwood is here. Mark, how you doing?
Real good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Get a little closer to that microphone.
All right.
Perfect. There you go. Sounding great.
There we go.
For people who don't know the name right off the bat, Lee Hazelwood, as you explained to me, Boris, the person who wrote These Boots Are Made for Walking?
Among many
and
others.
Produced it.
Yeah.
And produced it. There you go. Did he also sing on it? Because I know he also did some singing.
He did intend to sing it for himself and did later on in his life, but Nancy Sinatra actually made it famous back in 1966.
Right. But he has his own hits that he sang on as well, right?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, he was a pretty big deal in the 60s and 70s, I believe.
Well, he actually had his first big international hit in 1956, the year I was born.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, the name of the song was The Fool.
Oh, interesting. That's ominous.
How does it fit in?
Yeah, does that have to do with me at all?
Note to self, had a dun-dun-dun under that one for sure. That's hysterical, The Fool. All right, and you're joining us now to hang out. We appreciate it. Boris, how do you know Mark?
Well, you know, my gallery, the gallery at Mills Park, or Mills Gallery, is the bottom floor of a luxury apartment building.
Yes,
and the people that live in that building, you've met some of them on War Superstar.
Yeah.
And now Mark Hazelwood. There are some amazing people that live
there. So apparently this is the building to be in.
This is the building to be in. So I met Mark. Well, he's been there from the beginning. We, strangely enough, didn't really connect for the first year or so, but then you started appearing, coming down for the coffee, because I sit right next to the coffee maker. I can't wait for you guys to come and visit.
Yeah, we'll be there.
And we started talking, and I liked this guy immediately. He's connected to Hollywood royalty. He's written books himself. He's a scientist in ways, and, you know, he's just a sweet guy, and I thought you really would enjoy his stories, his Hollywood stories.
He's stretching he's stretching a line a little bit. I'm not exactly a scientist. I mean, okay, the book I did write was a nonfiction book.
Okay.
And it did have to do with, outer space.
Okay.
Close enough.
All right. However, I was not trained. I should have never even wrote those books. In fact, I got rid of the last few. I wouldn't even sell them to anyone.
Oh, wow, really? Do you still have copies of them, though, anywhere? Well, Do you have a box, maybe?
No, I don't. I got rid of all of them. Okay. However, you know, I could go on the internet and buy them.
You can find them.
If I wanted to, right? I wouldn't buy those.
I was going to say, if you have some laying around, I'd love to read them.
I don't recommend them.
I'm a reader. I love to read.
You'd be surprised with this man reads.
Yeah, but not e-books. So it's just not the same. Holding on your phone or a tablet, I need like a tactile.
You like conspiracy books and stuff like that?
I like everything. I like all
Well,
sorts
I got
of
lots.
Stuff.
Well, he's got stuff. Like, I have not read his because I don't think you want me to, but I'm
I don't want anyone to, but the first book was named Blindsided. And for people that were fearing the end of the world because some object was going to pass through the solar system, it was great for them. It scared them and made them feel good about their
It's also a great name.
Their chosen room that's full of food and things that are going to happen in the afterworld.
Sure. It helped reinforce something that they wanted to believe in.
Exactly.
That's great. I think that's fine. I mean, I don't
I'm a writer myself, knock on wood. I don't have anything published in book form yet. I would love to publish some books. So.
No, don't.
well, listen.
Funny how many writers say don't. All the way up to
it was such a hassle to be a writer. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's amazing how, yeah.
The only mistake you made, Mark, is you gave it a date.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. But you know what? I'm so glad I gave it the date because it was over with. After
oh,
that
and
day.
Then it could be done
when
with
when
it.
When the date came and went, 2003, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it was good to be over with that whole scene.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's good. All right. Well, now we're putting that behind us. But, I mean, Boris, he keeps telling us. Is he also stretching the truth about the stories a little bit?
Or oh, you want to hear about Rene Russo? Come on, oh, Mark.
You did mention something about Rene Russo.
And P.
I remember. Something about Rene Russo and P.
That's right.
All right.
This about... is so classy. Thank you for having me back.
Hey, you've been on the show already. You know what we talk about. We hold no, hey, pull no punches.
About to say something.
And
things
we,
I say.
And we're also fine with throwing out, disclaimers, allegedly, stuff like that. Don't sue us, Rene Russo.
Oh, no, please sue us, Rene Russo. All right. I want that cease and desist.
Actually, yeah, that's true.
Here we go.
We are trying to get sued. That's true. All right. So.
We've been trying for a long time.
Okay. So, Mark, would you like to regale us with a story or two? And our many
what
listeners?
What do you mean, Rene Russo and P? Is that the story you want?
Apparently, that's the lead-off story. That's what Boris was telling to begin with, I'm sure. Well, I don't know if you want to lead up to that one.
When I was coming up, I was a young teenager growing up in kind of a lavish environment in Toluca Lake, North Hollywood, California.
Okay.
I mean, next door lived Andy Griffith. Down the street, Bob Hope.
Oh, right? Wow.
And right. We lived in a Spanish estate with maids' quarters and fountains.
Do you mean like the Spanish tile room,
right,
with
exactly.
The whole shebang.
That's like my favorite type of house.
No, exactly. Right. It's so like,
yeah, one time Andy Griffith
Hollywood.
Was on top of that roof breaking tiles, drunk in his underwear. Yeah, there was a story about
wow.
that.
Wow, that's crazy.
Anyway, I was 16 years old, and somehow I met this girl behind the house. You know, there was an acre of property, and it was connected with a wall. Mm-hmm. And she was Rene Russo.
All right.
All right. She was 3 years older than me. I was only 16.
Wow.
So somehow, because I fit a little stereotype that she liked,
mm-hmm.
long-haired pretty boy.
Okay.
That was way back then. Yeah. I mean, I'm
about... The hair is shorter now.
Yeah,
it's a little bit shorter.
A little bit shorter, right. Anyway, so we got together. At one, I really loved being around her because, she was... gorgeous,
sure. Yeah.
And she was bright, and
she has it, which is why she became a movie star.
And, well, she hadn't gotten into movies yet,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, she had just gotten her first modeling job in New York when I met her.
Okay,
and a couple print things before that. Anyway. She had a very forceful personality, which I also liked. I don't want to be around some patsy girl that's just pretty and has nothing to say and has not got nothing going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, at one point, we were outside the estate, right? There's a wall and an electric gate, right? In fact, it was so exclusive they wouldn't even put in sidewalks there. It was just kind of went down from the side, the concrete.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
And she had her little MGBGT out there,
mm-hmm.
and she had to piss and started bitching about it. And then all of a sudden, she opens up the door to her MGBGT that's parked right there in front of it, mm-hmm. and she pulls down her pants, puts down the edge of her ass on this is a very low slung car,
yeah,
on the door where you close the door, right. And she pissed right there in front of the house. Right? And I was howling. I was like, oh my God, I love this girl. She's so ballsy. I've never seen anyone do that.
That's amazing.
I mean, it just blew my mind. She had so much chutzpah to do something
like that.
I mean, I loved her for that.
And that's something for sure like a 19-year-old does.
Yes.
So you got to be of a certain, I think, age. Well, they are a certain age mentality.
You just not really. I know a 30-year-old, I watched her do the same thing in a parking lot. Actually, she was 29. She just turned 30. Down in South Florida, just recently.
Just recently?
Yeah. So,
there you go, Chris.
Are you some sort of trigger? Are you?
I'm trigger for girls to piss out in park, in public?
At least it's some sort of revenge plotter, maybe.
Okay, there was at least a 40 or 50-year gap between the two incidents, so I can't say I'm a trigger.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. That's a small sample size. You're correct, sir.
Right.
Man, that is crazy. So, what's it like then growing up in... North Hollywood, where you're surrounded, like you're looking around, there's all these people that are on TV, they're in movies, they're in music. I mean, that's got to be obviously, most people, that's not the norm, you know? Like, yeah. We're here in Orlando. We know that Tiger Woods and Shaquille O'Neal lived in mansions and
closed off communities
all the way out there. Yeah, and we heard rumors that people saw them on I-4 every now and then. You know, so what's that experience like?
Well, I don't know exactly how to answer that, what that experience
because it's
like.
Normal to you.
Well, you know, it's good, it's bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose because you're around a bunch of movie people, it can be kind of exciting at times.
Mm-hmm. Did that ever get boring? Did that become old hat? Or it's like, yeah,
well,
sure, it's
let me just say, you know, I got a chance one time to take a ride with my mother all the way down to central Mexico to this little desolate place. It was almost like a little village with, you know, everybody had dirt floors. Mm-hmm. We actually went down to see where my maid's family lived.
Okay.
Right? And everyone there was so sweet and so nice and so happy, right? And I never seen such a group of people that all had the same nice, sweet attitude. Mm-hmm. Well, where I grew up, everyone had these huge egos, and drama was happening every which way but loose. And they want to kind of push you into the drama one way or the other.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always some sort of craziness happening all the time.
That's true.
Maybe it happened down there too, but I didn't see a bunch of sweet people where I grew up, okay? Right. I mean, I had love for my mother. My dad was, you know, I had love for him too, but he was gone most of the time, being rich and famous. But,
yeah, touring the world, being, yeah, exactly.
Right,
Lee
yeah.
Hazelwood. You're swimming with sharks, as they say. You're in a area where not everyone is looking out for the community; they're looking out for themselves.
Yes, that's about it. In fact, everyone in Los Angeles, different from Orlando, was always striving to be an individual.
Mm.
Whereas here, everyone wants to blend in and just be like everyone else.
Sure,
just kind of roll with the flow. And not in LA.
That's because the people who want to stand out and be individuals go to LA or
exactly.
Or maybe New York.
Well, yeah.
Depending on,
yeah, but it was actually looked up on. I mean, if you were a different sexuality, if you were a different race, if you had a different hair or a different way you dressed, everyone looked up to you.
Sure.
Whereas here, you know, that might be controversial or
maybe not so controversial.
I first got here. I got here in the 80s. It was different.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. You must have
just
seen...
Florida in the 80s is a completely different place.
Yeah, but Orlando specifically, were you here since the 80s? Or
well,
Florida
Central Florida.
Central Florida?
Central Florida. I mean...
The changes you must have seen in the last... I came here in 2000 and I've seen the place change. I can't imagine it's going all the way back to the 80s where, I mean, it must have been a nothing burg of like...
Orange Grove's got pastors, dude.
Orange Groves and Klan meetings.
Well, yeah, well, that was one of the reasons why after 6 months of being here, I grabbed my kid who was only 5. He's now 38.
Not okay, grown man,
I grabbed him and went back to Los Angeles for a while.
Oh, wow.
Because I thought, oh my God, I didn't realize I grew up in the ivory towers of the world in Los Angeles. I thought that we were kind of behind the times from maybe New York or something, right?
Sure, yeah.
But even though it's a laid-back culture, it's a lot different culture than New York. Mm-hmm. It was one of the ivory towers of the world, and I didn't know that people were so...
backwards?
I was getting to that word. I was supposed to stay spot positive for us here, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. No, I'm born and raised in this state. I know.
He knows.
I know.
Right. Yeah.
There was an incident one time. I was in a Denny restaurant with my son, and these people were, in a very family type situation, and they were making derogatory statements towards people of color. Okay, let me just say over and over again, and I twisted my ear. I grew up in a, but where, oh my God, everyone that's different, that's their difference, that's their greatness, that's what you look up to,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And here these people just openly in public. Very shortly thereafter, I grabbed my kid and drove back.
We're going back.
2,000 miles, all the way back to Los Angeles.
We're going back to where it's safer, LA.
No, it just...
More forward-thinking, more progressive. I mean, the bigger cities, your bigger cultural centers, where you're going to have more people from different backgrounds, you're going to have people that you're forced to meet other people you don't know, and you're forced to meet gay people. Oh, gay people exist. Oh my goodness. Or black people. Oh, they're black people. Oh, they're people too. All that.
Man.
You know.
It's a lot different today, though. Here in Orlando, it's more homogenous because of the internet, because of cable coming in a long time ago.
College, UCF, is pretty big now.
It is, It's kind of like LA when I left.
All right, so about 30 years behind LA. Right, okay. I'll take it.
Not all bad. Right, yeah, and that would be a compliment.
That's definitely a compliment for sure. Uh-huh. Right. 30 years ago in LA, style's pretty cool.
Right, yeah.
Covered from the 70s, uh-huh. Got some, the pastels and neons are kicking in. Uh-huh. 70s LA, man, all the big collars and stuff, that must have been cool. So you were a teenager at that point, I'm guessing. My math is
Oh, yeah, exactly. In fact, in 1971, I was 15, but I didn't live there in Los Angeles.
Okay.
When I was 15, my dad had moved to Stockholm, Sweden. Ooh. And he was there for 5 years. I ended up staying there 1 year with him, mm-hmm. when I was 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so I was in LA before that and after that. But for that year, in 71, I lived in Stockholm, Sweden.
So, the extent of your traveling, well, not even traveling, but like you then pretty much were born and raised in LA, except for this 1 year.
Where well, no, back when I was 11, my parents broke up at that point.
Okay.
And so my mother wanted to move abroad, so she went to Paris, France. So, mm-hmm. I lived there and spent 6 weeks even before that in Old Delhi, India on an ashram. Oh, you know, yeah, it was the 60s. We were with a guru.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Your chakras aligned.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so yeah, so you grew up either, your growing up experience was either you're in LA, in your one city, or something wildly different like Paris, India, or Sweden, a whole year in Sweden. What was it like in Sweden?
Well, okay, I noticed that the people were, they were a lot more fit, put it that way, than we were. They didn't eat as much.
Sure.
They were a lot of more blonde, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm. Only the odd one had dark hair. Mm-hmm. They seemed to be more cosmopolitan. They were as liberal as Los Angeles when it came to sexuality. In fact, they didn't. When I arrived, there was no age of consent law.
Interesting.
Okay. Oh, wow. While I was there, it came in. They finally voted in. And they voted in the age of 13. And so when I was
that's Alabama level.
But hold on. I had my benefit. I was 15 years old, and I was at one point I was going to the school to learn Swedish, and this Romanian girl who was 28 was also learning Swedish there. And we hooked up together. I mean, this is a girl that was no slouch.
Yeah.
She spoke five languages and had a PhD in Indian philosophy.
Whoa.
So I got together with her at 15 for 8 months.
Wow.
Whereas my dad primarily, okay, when I say primarily, he had a lot of different girls, but primarily was dating a girl that was 19.
Oh, whoa.
There we go.
And for those older people that have a little bit to do with music, I'll give you one scene. At one point, my dad was giving a concert, and we were across the street, the four of us, mm-hmm. okay, we're across the street in a hotel room. And another person that was going to be at that concert, a friend of his showed up. And this is only for people who knew how cool and significant this was.
Yeah.
Leonard Cohen walked in.
Whoa, wow.
The four of us were sitting there. He sat on the edge of the bed, broke out his guitar, one song concert for the four of us only. He sang Suzanne.
That's amazing.
I thought I was in a fantasy land. You know, it was cartoon land. It was a fairy tale for that to happen.
That's gotta be surreal.
There was no warning that would even show up.
Yeah, and then it's one song, he's gone.
And he's gone. Like, my dad goes up to the concert. You know, me and my girlfriend run off after that. I don't know what happened to my dad's girlfriend. Maybe accompanied him across the street to the concert. We didn't go to the concert.
Sure, sure. That is wild. And at the height of his powers, too, Leonard Cohen. Like, it's probably at his most popular.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm there conscious enough at 15 to really appreciate and understand how significant it was.
That's cool. That's awesome. Good. Yeah, well, it would have been a bummer if you were like six.
And that
like,
was.
Oh, this is the story my parents sold me. Boris, yes.
Yeah, what do these three movies have in common? Full Metal Jacket, Forrest Gump, and Natural Born Killers.
I was going to say Vietnam for the first two. Oliver Stone. No. That's Platoon. Okay.
All right.
They all feature songs from his father.
There you go.
Oh, very nice.
There you go. Do you know which ones? Can we say them?
Let's see. Full Metal Jacket. These boots are made for walking.
Yeah.
Uh,
probably the most famous use of that.
Forrest Gump was a rebel rouser.
Ooh.
And the Natural Born Killers had Shazam.
So, some contributions to pop culture. Just a few. Just a few.
Just some. Wait, a couple. There's 179 film credits for his father.
Amazing.
Wow. Rebel Rouser, by the way, a international hit in the 50s, along with The Fool, okay? And one of the first songs ever that had profanity in it that slipped by the censors.
Well, tell us about
that. And if you listen, there was what my dad called a rebel rouser yeller in the background, right? And at one point, if you listen carefully, and I could point it out very quickly so you would hear it, okay? And they asked him at the time, he said, you know, in an interview, some people caught it and asked him in an interview, and he just denied it, you know.
Of course.
But if you listen carefully, you know it's there. I guess I can swear on this. Yes. Yes. Right, okay. Yeah. At one point, he yelled, "Motherfucker!" In the background. He said the biggest one of them all.
That's awesome.
Be like, this shit is the 50s. Yeah. He let that slip through. It's still on the, it's still that's on the awesome. Record today.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Subversive, yeah. I mean, especially in the 50s and 60s, radio was like so locked down.
Yeah, it was.
Payola and Plagola was a thing. Dick Clark almost had his whole career ruined over that stuff.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. My dad got a little benefit from that. Okay?
I personally, I mean, I get it.
I mean, he got some underground money at one time. Dark, you know, didn't pay taxes on money.
Sure.
And he bought a little piece of property for my sister and I up in Fresno, California, okay? So I got benefit from some of the underhanded shady things that were going on in the music business,
aka the good old days.
Yeah,
because now it's just Spotify taking money from everyone and leaving pennies to the artists. Which is, hey, as a consumer, I love Spotify.
Isn't there a way to make money now doing it all on your own on the internet?
Yes, there is. There's websites like Patreon.com that people are using to put out their own art, whether it be music or podcasting is a big thing. And then the fans pay the artists directly. Like it's $2 a month, $5 a month, maybe just a donation basis. And then you get access to all this exclusive stuff that's through the website only. Radiohead was one of the big first musical acts to do that. I think 2004-ish. I can't remember which album, but they put out an album instead of on CD in Walmart and in stores and Best Buy, they just put it on their website and then said, you gotta buy it on our website. And that was like all the way in the beginning of the MP3.
You know, I know of a cryptocurrency.
I think so.
I know of a cryptocurrency that's going to aid in that process. They're setting it up. It's been a while for a while. It's called the Red Coin.
Okay.
It's going to be a social coin to help you know, anyone that's creating any substance on the internet, you'll be able to easily pay them with red coin.
You hear about that cryptocurrency that they're burying on Mount Everest?
Excuse me.
They're burying. How can you bury an algorithm?
Yes, exactly. It's a hard drive that is said to have what they hope to be $50,000 worth of their cryptocurrency. That they're about to do an initial coin offering on it. So they're hoping that then the offering does well, and then that hard drive
is worse.
Somewhere on Mount Everest is actually worth some money, and then people have to go up there and die to get it. Of course.
I have a question about this. So your generation, you're way younger than us. How are you guys interested in this crypto business?
No, it's a huge pyramid scheme. I'm staying away from it. Yeah, it's terrible. I know about it, but it's scary.
So you bought the programming from the central banks then?
Well, you know what? I'm not a fan of the banks. I say at the end of every episode, break up the big banks because I'm not a fan of the banks either.
But that line is thought up by a paid for disinformation agent from the central banks to say it's a pyramid scheme. It is absolutely not.
Well, then what's it based on though? Like what's it backed on? Just algorithms, Chris, as you say.
Chris, I'm on your side, so.
Okay, because I know that their algorithms are making huge, like, on these unbreakable encryption codes, right?
I have no idea how it all works.
A lot of the coins are, they're decentralized, and there's a limited amount of them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work and time and effort that goes into mining them.
The mining,
them.
Yes.
And every minute of the day, they're mining those coins. Mm-hmm. And that mining itself is a process that adds value to the coins.
The actual work going into it.
Exactly. Okay. And then the usage and actually, you know, bottom line is just like the U.S. dollar, mm-hmm. there's really only people's idea of what it's worth. Okay. That collectively, that makes the coin worth anything.
That's true.
Because we all agree that dollar is worth a dollar.
Because we talked about that before. No. As U.S. currency is fiat currency, we're pretending that this is worth X amount, and we're all in agreement together. It has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You got a coin you want to give me? You got a coin you want me to hold for a little while?
I mean, you can water down the fiat currencies by printing more and more of them.
Absolutely, which is what we're doing.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily fall in value when you do that. It actually falls in value when you lose faith in the government. Yeah. If you lose faith in the government, that currency can just go down.
Which, as you've seen, like with Venezuela being the stabilized way it has, and that currency, oh my God, they're
right. Oof. That's actually what's caused hyperinflation, not the printing of currency. This is something I get from a guy by the name of Martin Armstrong online.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And for people who know Armstrong or economics,
Armstrong economics. I'm gonna look into this guy. Very cool. That's good stuff.
Yeah, he's got a program called Socrates. Picked all the major highs and lows of just about everything in the society, not just finance.
Oh, really?
For decades. They actually threw him in jail for 9 years under a felonious charge up in New York to try to get the program from him. He wouldn't give it up.
Oh, wow.
And the only reason he even got out is because it went to the Supreme Court and they had to let him
out. It's interesting that they did it through official channels. Like, why didn't they just black bag him, throw him in a van,
take him to a base? CIA black site.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have got the program. He wouldn't have given it up, even being tortured.
Yeah, torture doesn't work.
Martin Armstrong is not...
Torture doesn't work, despite what Zero Dark Thirty wants you to think. Boris.
Yes, here's a little bit of trivia. What do these TV shows have in common? The Dick Clark Show, Shindig, The Lawrence Welk Show, and Dancing with the Stars.
I'm going to take a guess Lee Hazlewood appeared on them, or just his music?
Well, not Dancing with the Stars, Lee
Hazlewood. Oh, Dancing with the Stars. I missed that last one. Music feature on all of them?
Yes.
On Dancing
music
with the Stars.
Shows featuring your father's music, yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, Rugrats, The Simpsons, and like a lot of shows that I don't know because they're not from my time, but I mean...
I'd say I know Rugrats and The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Well, no, I know those too, but there's like 70 shows here. And didn't your father, he appeared on Sesame Street, right?
You know what? He's been dead for 10 years and I'm still learning things about him. And I admire him more and more as he's been gone for 10 years. So this is all new to me, really.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, really.
Good job, Boris. Awesome.
You know, when I first met him, I was like, I did my research like I always do. I was like, oh my God, your father was on this. And he goes, was he? I literally had to go like this, and he was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
He's a busy guy. He got to dig up that Sesame Street episode. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I would just go to a movie with him when I show up in town.
Sure. Well, then that's the other side. So he's having this amazing life, doing all these incredible things, but then he's not around as much. That's why you hear about Rick Moranis. Like, he disappeared all of a sudden. I was like, where did Rick Moranis go?
He just with his family.
He just wanted to raise his kids because he saw that his kids were, like, growing up. He's like, oh, no. But then you have other people who are still, you know, one of the things that broke up Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. They're having problems with that now. Jolie wants to take the kids to London to do Maleficent 2. Brad Pitt's like, yo, I live in L.A. I want to see my kids. So it's... Yeah. That industry seems very hard on families. Did you know a lot of families that like made it that were intact or were they, or they all broken?
Absolutely not.
Isn't that amazing?
When I was growing up, nobody was together.
That's amazing.
Okay, next door, Andy Griffith. I used to hang out with their kids, mainly Sam. Sam was Andy Griffith's adopted son, right? And one time, you know, decades later, I look at one of these mad rags sitting at the supermarket checkout, right? And there's a picture of Sam. He had died alone in an apartment or house that he owned because he had way too much money that he inherited. And his nose and face in a pile of cocaine.
Oh.
Yeah, this is one of my good little friends growing up,
it's
right?
Terrible.
Yeah.
And then that's how you found out about it.
Yeah, that's how I found out about it too, right?
Oh, man. That's terrible. Yeah, so there's something about that industry. As much as we're sitting in a room that's a pay-on to Hollywood, we're surrounded by all these movie images, because I love movies, we have a show that's about movies, but we also try to recognize that, man, it's scary out there.
I'm not supposed to bring up anything negative. But my wife, okay?
Yeah.
I had a wife way back in the 80s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The way she died, she was dating this drug dealer. We had broken up.
Uh-oh.
And
goodbye career.
Anyway, they played a game of Russian roulette.
No way.
She lost.
Oh, that's terrible.
Right. That, I mean, she was the mother of my only son at 5 years old.
Okay, Chris, do I bring you good guests or what? Serious. Come on. High
five. Boris is like a collector of interesting people.
I know.
That is, oh, that's a bummer of a story.
That is a bummer of a story.
But it's like straight out of the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, but you know, I have an X-Files story too. 6 months later, I met up with her in a different dimension. Oh my God, I can.
And
go
he
on.
Is not kidding.
I'm not kidding.
He's not kidding.
Was DMT or anything like that involved, or was
This was.
It was more of a transcendental type of thing.
No, no. As far as meeting up with her,
yes.
Oh, always straight.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I'm kind of a spiritual guy. I've gone to a lot of meetings. Yeah. I don't talk about that much unless anyone is really interested in it. But somehow I got some different things that happened in my life that most people don't happen. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen to them. Like, I actually met her like 6 times over a 15-year period.
Wow.
And I could tell when it was going to happen. I was fully conscious all the time.
Wow.
And then after meeting with her, it was like a come down to this reality. In that reality, everything was lighter. It was solid, but...
It's still like it's like a drug. So
it was nothing to do with drugs.
Well, no,
zero.
No, but I'm saying it's like it in that you're seeing something better, and then when you come back, it's all back.
In that respect,
this.
You're right. It so seemed like my consciousness was temporarily raised somehow to get inside of this.
Yes, yes.
But I couldn't explain how or why it happened. I figured it was only because of my love for her.
Okay.
That it happened.
Okay.
But
wow, that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thought.
The last time I got together with her, she said that she was reincarnated as my first grandchild.
Get out.
So I said, listen, okay, this is too much. Okay, you know, I usually begin to doubt that these meetings 2 weeks afterwards, because you know this reality is so much harder and lower.
Yes.
So I want you to affect my world in 2 different ways, just to prove to me this is real. Mm-hmm, all right. Mm-hmm. She did it. She infected the computer and she affected the law in my life. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my oldest grandchild, and it's for my eyes only, he doesn't believe it, my son doesn't believe it, nothing. Okay.
I don't believe it.
Okay, I don't expect anyone else to believe this, but my oldest grandson, who's taller than me, 17 years old, right?
Nice guy.
In my life, I see that he was my wife in this life.
All right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And then was born as my son's son, and... that's my reality. I couldn't convince anyone else of it, and I'm not going to try to. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff that comes up whenever you make these little connections. I couldn't explain anything, all right?
Right.
I couldn't explain nothing of how that works.
You just know
but what... But it is my reality.
You know what happened to you, and you know how you can explain
and it's real for me. That's all I can say, all right?
I respect that.
And that makes it real.
And that is... It is the reality I lived. And how much
it
of this 3D...
That does make it real.
It's 3D world that's really kind of a projection of this one being is real and isn't real.
Well, no, I mean whether he believes it or I believe it, or he believes it or not.
I don't.
If you
know, there's my son and there's my grandson.
And here's my visual.
When he was
here's
5 years old. when my grandson was 4 or 5 years old, he actually talked about being between worlds. All right. Okay. So he acknowledged it.
Before he even had a concept of
it. Exactly. Okay. He acknowledged it to me at a certain, you know, very young age. Mm-hmm. And then... he was meant to forget about it. And he always says today, I've only been a boy, I've always been a boy, and that's it. All right, you know, that's it. And you know, I respect that. I don't really, you know...
You're not going to push it on him.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he needs to concentrate on this life anyway. You know, if in fact, you know, reincarnation constantly happens, then you don't need to be concentrating on what you were before. And everyone seems to be, you know, a prince of Egypt or some sort of special person their past life. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's that way.
That actually makes me think of the joke, the Albert Brooks movie, Defending Your Life, where he's in purgatory and they make you don't have to, but there's an exhibit where you can see your past lives. So he puts his hand down on a thing and Meryl Streep, her character, puts her hand down. She's some like regal, great in a past life, something amazing. Right. He is... like an African tribesman running for his life,
like away from the
it's like just scared. So yeah, if we all have past lives, not all of them were wonderful.
Oh, no, most of them were probably pretty awful.
For many of us, this may be a step up the current lives we have. So enjoy them while you got.
I had a psychic tell me about my past lives one time. Yeah, my mother was into that. She paid $100 for this psychic to you know, talk about whatever. Anyway, and so you know, I listened to her. And I said, you know, you really have brought up too many things that you don't know anything about, and my mother couldn't even have told you.
Interesting.
So how is this happening? He says, well, all of us has these, you know, angels that follow us around all their entire lives. I just have a direct connection with mine, and mine is simply talking to yours right now and giving me direct information. I don't know these things, she said, and then she starts saying, all right, well, in for a dollar, in for a dime, whatever, or maybe it's the opposite way.
In for a dime.
Anyway, yeah, she said, dollar, yeah. You want to know about your past lives? And she started telling me about my past lives. And then, you know, at one time I was an Oriental guy and I just did, you know, little inlay work, artwork. And another time I was just, you know, a Native American Indian here in the United States, just living a normal life.
Interesting.
And then there was a couple lives where I was a writer and I was opposing the deep state at the time, and I had a print shop that got blown up when I was writing about the corruption of the railroad. Okay, all right.
So there's something's lining up then. It's like, I could see myself, right?
Right, yeah, the last life, supposedly I was a writer for the Stars and Stripes newspaper, and she even got my name, Harry something. Anyway, and I wasn't an editor or a big deal. I was just a humanitarian writer, and then when I went to Normandy Beach, they actually let me travel to write about it. Mm-hmm. All right, I got killed, and then and then 11 years later, I was born in 56.
Then you were born 11 years.
So okay, this is stuff that I'm sure that a lot of people are going to discount because they've been programmed a certain way,
which is fine.
Okay, and that's fine. Yeah. I don't really care what people believe and what they don't believe. It's just. My reality is
like Drew said.
It's the way I think.
What other people believe doesn't affect your reality. Yeah. And Boris, yes.
Yes, what do these three people have? The actor Richard Widmer, the actor Alan Alda, and the actor Bo Hopkins.
They were all on MASH.
No, they were all in a movie with his father.
Ah, which
because
one?
His father acted as well. And the movie is called The Moonshine War, 1970. Remember I put a clip on online about a month ago?
Yes, you did.
And he's acting in, I mean, the his father war. Did everything.
Okay, like I mean, it's kind of strange, though. You know, my dad did not do too many movies. Okay, he made a movie in Sweden once that was a complete bomb. I didn't even like it.
A Western, right?
Well, no, it wasn't exactly a Western. I really don't want to get into it. I didn't like it myself at
Swedish
the time.
Swedish Western.
A Swedish
all right.
Western.
The Swedish meatball Western, is what they call them. Instead of spaghetti Westerns, they're meatball
what
Westerns.
What was the name of that Swedish? Anyway, I forget it.
I can find out.
Yeah, it was the movie that he made. He actually starred in, he produced, he wrote it, everything. Anyway, the one movie, one of the few very movies he was involved
it's
in.
It's called Mar Vart Hus for Kadova's Friend Trigger.
No.
That's not?
Not. Not unless that's Swedish for something.
That sounded pretty Swedish to me.
What I was about to say.
It's this one here. Me heart was for Nugger.
Smoke, I think.
Oh, Smoke.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know. Anyway, that movie, Moonshine Wars, I missed seeing my dad a lot because he was always busy in the studio, out at orgies, okay, taking drugs.
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
And, you know, hiding and just having a good old time.
Living the life. The stereotypical Hollywood lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. However, for whatever reason, how strange it was, he actually took me on the set of Moonshine Wars. And I was there in this rural area where there was a stream going through it, and they were shooting this movie. For a couple days, you know, I was hanging out, just looking around.
That was like the one time he decided to take you along.
Right, exactly. Wow. And it ended up being only the one of just a very few movies he was ever involved with.
Well, maybe that's why, because he knew he didn't do so many movies. Like, yeah, this kid might enjoy
I don't know. I don't know what the thing was. I mean, I figured it was just, an accident of circumstance or, you know.
Or maybe he was like, I forgot I was supposed to watch this kid today. I got to work. All right, come on, Marcus. You want to meet Alan Alda? This guy's going to be a star one day. Was he already a star by 1970?
Oh, yeah.
He's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Chris, here's something cool.
Yes, Boris.
So what celebrities would you like to know something about? Chances are he or his father have met them. So if they're Elvis?
Okay, well, I Elvis. Never met Elvis, but my sister had her picture taken with Elvis.
So did Nixon. So there you go. Your sister and Nixon. No,
hold it. That's funny.
Yeah.
My sister used to live in San Clemente, California. One time she was walking the beach,
yeah.
And there was Richard Nixon. and she had her picture taken with Richard.
Whoa!
Nixon.
Ah!
Is that weird? Weird or what? Because I'm sure you never were told that story. Yeah, no one here knows that piece of trivia.
Nope.
How did you even mention?
Because it's in the air.
It's in the air. Exactly. That's
yes.
it.
Yeah, yeah. I believe in that stuff. Yeah. Well, that's crazy. We're all one.
Supposedly, there's only one mind. Yes. And we just tap into it in different areas.
Yes. It's the blanket theory. You know, we're all the same stardust. Over here, it's a hammer. Over here, it's an orgasm. Over here, it's a clock.
So you're never ever actually reading anyone else's mind. You're just reading your own mind and their connection to it.
Yes, yes. Yes, exactly.
So it's all the whole thing is said wrong. It's incorrectly.
I believe it. It's like this is for real. If you do a crossword puzzle a day later after it's published in a newspaper, it's easier to do. The day a crossword puzzle
that makes
comes,
perfect sense.
Yeah, the day a crossword puzzle comes out is the hardest it is to do. If you do the Monday crossword puzzle on Friday or the Friday crossword the next Friday, all the answers are in the air.
That's true,
and they're easier to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the theory of this. Yeah, you just have to be able to go there and grab them. Mm-hmm. All right, Boris gave us a challenge: name a celebrity. See if you have some sort of story. All right, I'm looking around the room. How about I give you an easy one? Clint Eastwood. Big Clint Eastwood fan here, despite his rightish politics.
Okay, I have rightish politics and leftish politics. You can't put me in a category. In fact, this whole left-right thing is programmed into us
by these
deep state controllers.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
That want us to hit each other against each other
successfully.
Instead of look at them and blame it all on where it should be.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's actually very true.
It's been working.
Bill Hicks was saying that all the time, the two puppets.
Okay,
and
the only thing connection I have with Clint Eastwood
is
I follow him on Twitter. And I think he even follows me for whatever reason.
Oh, you got the follow back.
Well, then he should tweet him.
Man.
It's probably his handlers are tweeting, right? Or who knows?
I mean, Chris, you definitely didn't get a follow back from Clint Eastwood.
Me, no. Michael Jai White.
No.
That's about it.
Spawn himself.
Yeah, Spawn himself. How about, let's move up a little bit. Let's jump forward to Richard Pryor. I don't even know why I thought Richard Pryor.
I thought he was funny every time I saw him, but I never saw him in concert. I only saw him on TV like anyone else.
Like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and the movies as well. Silver Streak and all this stuff with
all right, let's get to talk about Nancy Sinatra.
What do I know about Nancy Sinatra?
Well, your father's relationship with Nancy. She's still alive, by the way.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, my father did admit to me at one point that him and Nancy had a thing going.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, they worked together for more than just one song.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I was up at her, she had this house on the hills in Hollywood Hills. Mm-hmm. And one time as a kid, I was brought up there, you know, probably when I say kid, I mean 11, 12, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I looked at Nancy. She didn't have any makeup on. And I thought, well, she looks hot, you know, in these pictures and on television, but she's nothing to look at right now.
Sure.
But then I go over at this huge glass coffee table, and there's this huge glass bowl. That was interesting. It was full of peanut M&Ms, the kind I like. Now that was the whole house was glass. I could see all around. It's a beautiful view. Nancy Snot was there. It was that peanut M&M's that
was
getting,
he was there
that,
for.
That was great. There I mean, that made my day looking at that
peanut
candy.
Peanut M&M's are delicious. Yeah, right. They are amazing. My favorite M&M's? Yeah, I think so. Drew?
I mean, I think regular M&M's.
You're more of a regular M&M's guy, no. Boris?
I was just glad that bowl was filled with M&M's. I was wondering where that was going.
Could have gone to any number of places is where that one could have gone. All right, I'm checking my time here. We're getting pretty close to 45 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping this one up. Mark, definitely want to have you back on the show. I'd love to have you on one of our normal weekend shows like we just did with Boris. He'll tell you all about it. It's full of segments and music cues and tomfoolery.
I thought that's what this was going to be.
No, this is going to be, we're hanging out with you. We want to learn about you this time.
So
special bonus
episode. You knew this was going to be...
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. Because he was prompting me that like it was going to be the show just like you described.
I told him about the box and the bag and he was so excited.
Oh, we can still do it. We can still do some swaggery. Let's do some swag bag. Mark, we're going to send you out of here with some swag. You got a bag over there? No.
I got a bag.
You have a bag?
I need some of the box.
Oh yeah, all the boxes. Just, you know what? There's no box, unfortunately, but we do have. Give him a swag bag.
He told me about the bag and the box, and I would have chose the box only because there's, you know, different connotations for box.
There are so many different connotations for box. This time the box is empty, so you wouldn't want to choose the box. Empty box. Well, Drew, bring out that swag bag.
Well, I'd hope the box would be empty.
No, he got a record. Drew, what do we got in that swag bag? That's sitting next to you, randomly.
We've got some magic grow capsules. You got 12 bug buddies. You drop them into water and watch it form a bug.
You got a ridiculous toy to
play with?
You know
what? I got 5 grandkids. That'll be good for them.
Yes, there you go.
We've got some rainbow high bouncers. They're hot. Bounce them. It contains 5 balls.
Bounce them high. 5 balls. 5
kids. Grandkids.
Perfect. Yeah.
We've got a Cinema Crisp Producer bootleg edition of The Omen. Runtime 1 hour.
Oh, that's
hour and
perfect
50 minutes.
For you.
There you go.
Perfect.
The Omen?
The Omen, yes.
For me?
Yeah, it's your private life, basically.
We've also got a PFT Media magnet and a whole bunch of stickers.
Big stickers
from our
and
podcast.
Magnets. So it's stuff from our PFT Media brethren. Mark, yeah, we're going to have you back on because that was a lot of fun.
All right.
Do you have an online presence that you would like to share with people?
Okay,
or?
You know, there was a point where. Well, let me just say, I go back to 11 years old. I always have been kind of a nerd, mm-hmm. All right?
Sure.
And at a certain point, I was 13, I started smoking pot just to kind of cover it up and blend in. But then mm-hmm. I finally, you know, grew up and accepted my nerdiness.
Okay.
All right. Well, the first subject that I dug into was health, all right? Mm-hmm. I'm about 62 years old. At one point, you know, I didn't have the discipline and I was kind of chewing on meat a little bit. A lot and I got cancer. All right, so I knew what to do. I was kind of ballsy about it, and I went on raw foods and got rid of it. Mm-hmm. But I did go down to Hippocrates Health Institute and took their 9-week self-educator course to get their certificate, you know, to learn all about it. And when I was starting on my own, the cancer wasn't going away, and I was making a one fatal mistake, and that was you don't add fruit sugar to cancer. Cancer thrives off of any sugar. So the second I got on raw foods down there without the sugar, it started going away. All the pain was gone in 2 weeks. I mean, this is 4-stage cancer I had, and I got rid of it.
Wow.
So I have a, I don't tell this story on my website, but I have a little, you know, presence online. It's, let's see, what is the name of that website? It's HiWawaRaw.com.
Okay.
And that's it's spelled in the most basic terms. Hi, H-I, mm-hmm. Wawa, like water.
Okay. W-A-W-A.
HiWawaRaw.com, because I went on raw foods. High water content raw foods is basically what
it
is. So HiWawaRaw.com.
You can't
access it on your phone because I wrote... To be creative, I created these little upside-down pyramid paragraphs. And I wrote the whole thing in upside-down pyramid paragraphs or whatever. I mean, this is for somebody, this is a long paragraph. I read the first few, hold it. The lines are getting shorter, so I'll just go ahead to the bottom, right?
Yeah.
I figure I'd entice people. You know, those first few lines will be the longest, right? And then they said, well, it's getting shorter. I'll keep reading.
It's a reward system.
Right,
like,
exactly.
You're getting there.
That was the reason for
it. That's fantastic. Hi, wow, wow, raw. .com, also easy to remember.
Right.
Because it's fun to say.
Yeah.
It rhymes.
And the other thing I wanted to say is you're writing your biography, and we are shopping for a publisher because he is filled with stories.
Very cool.
You know, we're just scratched at the surface.
And you are a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Oh,
God,
absolutely.
He is.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of personal trauma and trials and all that. Which maybe if he comes back, he will share.
But what good story doesn't have drama in it? You know, there's no drama.
I already told
no
the worst
story.
One of my life.
I
thought I was going to get back together with her, right?
Yeah, that's wild.
I mean, she was one of those gorgeous menopause when she walked in the room women, and I was in love with her. Even though we'd broken up, I didn't really know how to handle her or, you know, be with her.
Sure.
And finally, I stopped being the Svengali, because I met her when she was 16, I was 21, so I was 5 years older. And, and I just started liking her and loving her for who she was as a friend.
Sure.
But unfortunately, she was caught up in the whole cocaine thing and drug dealer, and that led to the whole
suicide thing. Yeah, and at that time, too, it was so rampant. Oh, man.
Well, it was everywhere.
Yeah, so that definitely was the biggest story, but I'm sure we can get some more trauma out of you.
You can.
It's a very therapeutic room in here. We're all about letting it all out. Boris, thank you, sir, for joining us again. We appreciate it.
It's been an honor. I hope I can come back.
Boris, you're a lot of fun. We'll definitely keep having you back. And all right, thank you for downloading this thing. Drew, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
And on behalf of Cinema Crespity, so we'll talk to you guys soon.
A PFT Media production.